Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Taking a look today at your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. We'll talk with him about credit card transactions on the internet, and we'll, of course, answer your computer questions as we visit with him. I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. And Peter Green, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Great to have you with us. Let's talk a little bit about credit card, the credit cards for a minute. If someone has a business and wants to accept payments, what do you suggest? Let's start with that end. What do you suggest they do to make it safe for their customers and themselves?
Well, number one, you have a bank account, so money has to be, funds have to be available for you to, in a sense, engage starting to do transactions. And there's a number of different options, but if you are like a merchant going back, let's say, 10, 20 years before the internet, there's what has been established is basically like a clearinghouse or a gatekeeper. And there are a number of different ones that are out there. And they work with the banks to allow that transaction both from the merchant side and from the consumer side to be a secure transaction so that the merchant's information is protected, the consumer is validated, their credit card or debit card is authorized to exchange money. So the merchant can feel good that, hey, I'm selling goods and services and I'm going to get paid. And, so it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
The newer ones that have come out are things like PayPal, which has been around for probably about 20 years, but really is more of you could send money from your bank account to somebody else. You could give money. You could donate money. And you didn't really have to have a credit card. And then they tagged along with being able to use credit cards. So you can transfer money from your bank account or from a credit card to make a purchase online. And eBay, when it started, did not offer they tried to offer their own, but PayPal gained a lot of steam in their backyard. It was like the fox loose in the hen house. So eBay bought PayPal, and I believe it was last year where PayPal broke off from eBay and became its own separate entity and went public. But for probably, I'm thinking maybe 12, 14 years, PayPal was an eBay company.
Yeah.
So what's happened in the last year is there have been certain mandates from MasterCard and Visa Card along with the banks for new credit cards being authorized with chips in them. So when you go to make a purchase, not all merchants accept the chips because the industry is trying to catch up with software to fix that. Not all readers that look like they're ready to read the chips can read the chips. And if you've been out and about and buying things, you may have recently experienced some larger merchants changing over to, okay, now you can put your chip card in.
Yeah, some do and some don't. I have a chip card. And
yeah. So in that case, the card still can be swiped. So what happens is online, when you put your credit card information for a purchase, so let's say you're a user and you create an account with the merchant that you're doing business with, so now you have your information online, you can either save your card or you can just use your card that one time. What happens is the credit card information gets tokenized. So the identity of you along with your credit card information gets encapsulated in this digital token that gets passed to the merchant. And the merchant then can either use it right away or they can hold on to it, but expires within a 30-day period. So it's been approved for, let's say that transaction was $100. The merchant can't charge more than $100. They could charge less than $100. So let's say something happens and they can't fulfill the entire order, so they cancel an item. So they can charge for $99, but they can't charge for $101. And that token only lasts for 30 days. It expires. So there's some new safeguards built in for, you know, dealing with, you know, credit card processing online. The other thing is when you do shop online, it's typically in a, on a secure site, so you should see HTTPS and not just HTTP. There are also certificates that are given to merchants for doing business online where they've actually stated, made certain statements of who they are, and they're giving a certificate that says we've been reviewed and we are who we say we are, versus, you know, a business trying to be falsified and just tricking you into, you know, sending them money. So there are certificates that are out there, and there are other companies out there that do things that, like eTrust, where they are basically putting a branding or certification on a business that says, hey, they really are a valid entity out there. So there are all these ways that e-commerce has built up to become safe, but then we hear about, you know, credit cards being, you know, ripped off by the tens of thousands or millions in numbers and being compromised, where servers have been hacked into. But the cards themselves and the transactions online have become more secure and more, I'm not sure what the right word is, but not transient, but, you know, temporary, and it's not going to be out there forever. So once that token is only for that merchant, yeah, that individual, that sale, that amount.
It's interesting, you know, between debit cards and credit cards, if I have my choice, I will always use the credit card. Just because if the credit card somehow gets hacked, you know, there's a limit.
Right.
And but if a debit card gets, your debit card somehow gets hacked, and you, that person gets into your bank account,
right,
someone called the show to say that her entire bank account had been emptied.
Wow.
And they had even gone so far as she had $3,000 in overdraft or whatever. They had even taken the $3,000 extra.
Wow.
So, for me, if I can have my choice, I'm going to always use a credit card. Well, that's...
And plus you have the security code that's on the back of the card. That's also, yeah, another component,
right,
of the whole, you know, secure transaction. Your address... Some companies even ask you, you know, prior questions if you're doing any large transactions where they are, like, trying to validate, hey, did you live at this address 5 years ago? You know, what car did you drive? We know you were you had a registered vehicle 10 years ago. You know, tell us which one it was.
I got a call from Visa one time not that long ago saying, did you purchase something and have it sent to Arizona? And I said, no. And they said, okay, we'll cancel that. Someone had gotten and then they sent me a new card.
Now, I will say something. In my recent travels, you need to be careful when you're out of the country, because I used a credit card out of the country, and when I came back, there was a charge for buying some cosmetics. And I was like, I didn't buy that. Yep. And... You call up the credit card company, they cancel your card, issue you a new card, you get another card the next day.
Yeah.
And you know, there you go. And that's it.
Well, Mark in Colfax has a computer question for us, so let's go to Mark. Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm just wondering, when I'm done with a computer, I'm going to take it to a recycle center. How do I make sure that my information that was on that computer is secure, and I'll take my answer off the air?
Yeah.
Well, the easiest way is, you know, if you you could take it out of the computer. You're talking about recycling it, like physically the materials are going to be, you know, taken
apart. The whole computer, yeah.
And all that. You could take the hard drive out, and if you put a nice big magnet next to it, that's going to, you know, disrupt the drive itself. Some people feel better if they smash it You can open it, you know, open it up with probably a little specialized screwdriver, but you could open it up and, you know, just scratch the platens on them, the mm-hmm. little spinning plates.
Is it hard to get that drive out?
I haven't done it recently. Used to do it just to see what they look like inside, so it's kind of fun taking it apart. So it really shouldn't be too bad. You just need probably the screwdriver is the most important piece.
So, and actually, you can, let's say, whatever, go online and say, how do I get the hard drive out of my computer?
Yeah.
It'll probably have a blow-by-blow description or something.
Yeah, you could also submerge it in water, salt water.
Oh.
That would, you know.
The hard drive, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's airtight, so you'd probably have to do something to just kind of expose, you know, a hole in it or drill a hole
mm-hmm.
and then submerge it in salt water. Of course, salt water would cause it to decay, so
yeah.
that'll make it pretty difficult to get something off of it.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Someone did wonder, we had a call, wondering how dangerous it is to use credit cards to purchase things on the web.
Like I said, you know, looking for a secure website, so the HTTPS in your browser, they use a lock symbol or green, so it's not broken when you're on a secure site. I would say it's very safe overall.
Okay. Yeah.
I give it high marks. I give the industry high marks for what they're doing. There are credit card alerts that you can set up in your account, so I encourage people to, you know, actively. You know, just not sign up as a user for your credit card account. You can look at your statements. You can look at transactions. You can look at pending authorizations.
I look at all those.
You can set alerts. I know the MasterCard, Visa card companies, American Express. There's all sorts of settings in those accounts that you can take advantage of. If you're reaching a limit, if it's the size of a transaction. So there's a lot of, you know, curbs or, you know, limits that you can actively, you know, get involved with your credit card company. And also, you know, as far as the merchants that you do business with, you know, call customer service and they'll help you go through a transaction if you need assistance.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. That's his website. And every one of our lines is filled, so we'll go to Nancy and Baldwin next. Nancy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a computer that died. It's 8 years old, a Dell computer. And my son-in-law said, just get a Google Chromebook. You don't have to have any protection on them. They're already protected. And that sounds good to me. What does your guest think?
All right. What do you think of Chromebooks?
I haven't looked at one recently, but when I did look at them compared to some of the other models out there, I felt they were kind of underpowered. There are a lot of, you know, when you look at a Chromebook, or I call them netbooks, versus if you're looking for something that's more robust and like a laptop or, you know, looking at a tablet, you know, it's some people that have not had a computer, you know, gone out and shopped for a computer for a while, and they take a look at something like an iPad or a tablet. And they find, you know, at home that all they're doing is email and browsing the web and checking maybe their accounts online, things like that, that a tablet or an iPad is a good solution. If you're looking at something that's got a keyboard, you could still add a keyboard to those. Those are options. But if you're looking for something that has a little bit more horsepower, where you're going to run applications, maybe you're going to run Quicken, or an accounting system, or do a lot more word processing or spreadsheet
movies,
work,
maybe?
Or looking at movies. You know, there are 17-inch laptops that you can buy for probably $350 to $500
that,
that, you know, have the Windows, or you're going to go more expensive with a Mac. But, you know, again, it's the same thing. You know, what are you looking to do with the computer? What are the applications you're going to use? And then find the hardware, the computer that best fits your needs.
Mm-hmm.
Are you safer getting a Mac? I hear that is their safer computer than regular computers.
They're not attacked as much by viruses. They are, but not as much as a Windows system. I've worked with both of them over the years, and they both have issues. But it is going to be more expensive, you know, in terms of looking at the hardware. But they both work well for what they do. But, you know, I'm not going to tell you that an Apple doesn't have problems. I'm not going to tell you a Windows system doesn't have problems. It's, you know, just like, you know, you buy a GM, you buy a Ford, you buy a Volvo, whatever, you know, you're going to have people that sing the praise for one and, you know, not for the other.
Right. Okay,
but again, it boils down to really, what are you going to use it for? Find the applications, you know, make sure that they work on the hardware that you choose, and, you know, see what you like. You know, the screens are different. I know Apple has some very, very, you know, really robust,
beautiful
video screens, displays, which you may go, wow. I mean, if you watched The Big Bang Theory, Sheldon was gifted, you know, a 4K screen, and he's like, oh, my God, you know. So, you know, there are those things to consider, too, you know, when you look at the hardware.
Absolutely. Good luck, Nancy. Thank you so much
for
coming.
Yeah, have fun. Enjoy the journey.
I'd look outside Chromebooks myself, but anyway.
Like I said, they're just not a lot of options versus the other ways.
My daughter uses a Chromebook for school,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay, but...
Yeah, it's, like I said, it really boils down to what I've taught, you know, for 30 years, Larry. What are your needs, goals, and objectives? Yeah. Find the application, and then what does that application run on? What hardware do you need to look at? And if you've got both options, then how much does it cost? And what are your limits with that?
Michael in Middleton up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, I have a computer security question.
Okay.
And yesterday morning I got notice from my phone, which is pretty much how I access everything. And it's a BlackBerry, so the security's pretty good. I got a notice that somebody had tried to access my Gmail account who knew my password, and it got blocked because it wasn't like a device that it recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of a phishing scam like that? I mean, I went through and I changed my eBay password and Amazon password and, you know, different things, and I was just kind of stunned by that. And actually, mm-hmm. you know, it was like a small town in Texas. I thought about calling the police down there and saying, do you know any hackers down there that are active? But have you heard of a phishing scam like that?
I've heard. I mean, I've seen attempts on accounts. I actually had eBay call me and tell me that, you know, someone was going after my account, and they shut it down until, you know, I talked through with them to reestablish a new access. So I've seen that. My daughter, I think there was some kind of large Gmail hack. Probably like four or five years ago, my daughter was involved in that. Where, you know, then they get into your account and they send out emails that want money because she was out on a trip and broke her leg or her arm, and there are people. You know, there's ransomware, which has been out. The Cryptor virus. There are people out there that are always trying to find an easy way to make money. And
the notice I got just said that they actually had my password, which is kind of shocking. I mean, my wife was a part of, she does some work with federal government, and she was a part of the big identity hack in that. I'm wondering, like, how the heck did they get my password, and why would anybody care?
Well, that may
I went through and I changed them all, but, I mean, it was just...
They didn't ask you to send anything to them, did
no.
they?
No. I got a message from either BlackBerry, the BlackBerry version of email, or saying it's like, you know, access was denied at this place. Mm-hmm. Better change your thing. And it's like, the point of entry was Winters, Texas. And I don't know anybody there.
Yeah, Google does have settings in their account, and they track, you know, the usage in terms or the access of your account,
right.
So that if it's not normal, they will report it to you.
Right, and it sort of wasn't a recognized device.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I've got, coming up, Jill can maybe help me, the Department of Consumer Protection is coming up with a show pretty quickly here, trying to remember what day. Anyway, it's a question we can pose to them to see how, if they've, you know, what their experience has been too, because they get all many complaints about a variety of things, including something like that.
I know when I access my account from a not typical system or a place, Google notifies me that, you know, something's happened, even when I do it. Which is good.
Yeah, it would be, absolutely. Michael, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Yep. And we'll turn to some other folks,
you know,
here. Let's
Thing, you know, passwords that keeps coming up, and you know, you want to be able to access your information. You just don't want to make it so complicated on your end that you forget it. Or you struggle with it because then you get locked out of your accounts. So I talk about keeping, you know, in your stable of passwords, you know, combinations that are easy enough for you to remember, but diverse and different so that it's not simplistic for somebody to guess that even knows you.
Yeah.
Because it's... You need to make it a challenge. And there are systems where you set up your account where it tells you, hey, your password is weak, medium, strong, very strong. They're doing that for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to use phrases, so I think up of phrases and then use either the last letter or maybe the first letter of each word of the phrase or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. You can come up with some dandy phrases that may be kind of associated with whatever you're using password for. And that can work. That works for me because it makes it easier for me to remember it.
But you also need to have numbers and
symbols. Absolutely. Yeah. Andy in Onalaska has something. Hi, Andy. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, a couple of things. One thing on the destroying the hard drives, especially desktops with the larger hard drives in them, the magnets that you can get out of there are super strong, and they're excellent for putting even heavy items on your refrigerator or wherever.
Oh, cool.
But the thing I was going to say was I've actually gone to, when I make online purchases, I've gone to using a particular company's prepaid card, which you can, which will actually go to your address so that merchants will ship to you. And that way I don't have to worry about getting my my actual bank account card out there or my credit card out there.
Yeah.
And there's no monthly fee. There's no transaction fee. So all I have to do is make sure I have enough cash on the card.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know the folks from Consumer Protection have talked about that as an option for people to kind of protect your account, your bank account.
So do you still have an online account that's hooked up with your bank account to transfer funds to it?
I actually do. This particular card, you can go into particular large chain store and just go up to a cashier and give them some cash and they'll put it on the cart.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I don't have it hooked up to my bank account or to a cart.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a good idea.
That's all I wanted to say.
All right. Yep. Thanks a lot, Andy.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's a good thing to think about.
It also depends on, you know, what kind of purchases you're making online.
Yeah.
For example, I've had to make some really large purchases, so I've used PayPal, where I've actually used their credit system to give me additional time for financing. So, you know, that money is really coming from them and not from me.
Yeah.
Even though it is coming from me.
Right.
At that time of the transaction, it's not. But it's a large transaction, and it was done online to save a lot of money.
Yeah. Jay in Pewaukee up next. Hi, Jay. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to ask about when the other caller asked about destroying a hard drive before you donated it. Usually what I do is use the killdisk.com. They have a program that you can download to a thumb drive and then run it, and it completely destroys the hard drive, or, you know, wipes it with zeros and ones. Mm-hmm. Before you donate it, so there's no information that's able to be accessed after.
Very good.
Sounds good.
What is it again? It's called
Kill Drive.
Kill Drive.
Kill Disk.
Or Kill Disk.
Or Kill Disk.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering if, you know, if he's ever heard of that, or if that's, you know, if he thinks that's reliable.
I haven't personally used it. I would probably, you know, go look for reviews of it and see what the feedback is. Usually sites like CNET.com, PC Magazine would have reviews of those kind of products, and they usually put them through pretty good tests. They may even have an alternative to it.
Thank you very much for that question and call. Doris in Greendale, you're up next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, hello. Calling about scams. My Google account also shut down last month, and the screen said that people were trying to, there was unusual activity, and it just locked up like a brick. And then a screen showed that I should call an 800 number. Well, I'm 87 and probably gullible, but I called the 800 number thinking it was from my, it's a Mac laptop, an Air Mac top, and I called the number, and I got someone in India, and they said their headquarters were actually in California, and they told me that I'd probably been scammed by Kubeface, a virus. They get 5 or 6 calls a day, apparently, and they offered to set it up for me, and there would be either a $200, $300, or $400 charge, depending on how long I wanted the warranty to last. Well, it took several hours, and they had my password, of course. Then they gave me a new one, added just several numbers to the old one, actually. And now I'm in business again, but I'm wondering if I was scammed.
You know, this is, Doris, I hope you'll call back. You know, this is, it sounds to me like you may have been. And I hope you'll call back on the show on Thursday, because Thursday our consumer protection people will be on, and that's an area we're going to talk about with them. And normally we say only call once a week, but in your case, I'm going to say you can call again a second time and call back, and let's compare notes, because they would have received, it sounds to me like you may have been.
Yeah, I would definitely say that you were scammed. I've seen that happen on one of my Macs, and it said, call this 800 number. And I talked to them, and I kind of reamed them out for what they were doing, where they were popping up a message and call this 800 number, and, you know, we can help fix this. Somehow they managed to compromise the browser and, you know, make it behave or behave wrong so that it would frustrate me. And it's something that can be fixed, but you would probably need some computer help to fix it. but something that you definitely wouldn't have to pay, you know, over the phone and talking to customer support like that to have that happen to you.
Doris, thank you again, and I would...
This is an example, like she's using a Mac, Larry.
Yeah, and I've,
I've had it happen, so I can attest to what she's gone through.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, you know...
Not any
Macs
fun.
Are not, like I said, there are problems with both. There's good and there's bad. It's just, I'm not saying, you know, one is absolutely perfect, because it isn't, and she has a, you know... She is an example of how that can happen.
Joe emailed to say he has... And thanks again, Doris. Joe emailed to say that he has Windows 10 on his 5-year-old laptop. He just made some adjustments to help with acceleration and lost his search window.
Hmm.
Any ideas about that?
Lost his search window on Windows
10.
Explorer to do the search within the... computer. If it's a search within the computer, number one is if it's a function of Windows 10, you can probably, I haven't had to do this on Windows 10 yet, but there is probably a program to download from Microsoft or a utility instruction that would have it compare and try and find what program is missing as part of the operating system and attempt to repair to it. And then I remember someone called in and had a search program that they downloaded that they added to their computer because it was better than, you know, the search that was available through the Windows operating system. So that's how I would approach that.
You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Chris on Facebook says the 1Password or iPassword app is great. It creates very complicated passwords you don't have to remember. You remember one password to log into it, and then it opens and fills in all the login information secure, and you can access it from different devices.
To make it easier for you.
To make it easier for you, which is not a bad...
Yeah, for some people, it simplifies their life and, you know, gives them some measure of security. I personally don't use that.
Is it 1Password or iPassword? 1Password?
Might be iPassword.
I think it's iPassword.
But again, you know, CNET, PC Magazine, ZDNet, those are good resources to use that do reviews of programs like that. And, you know, they tell you if they're free, they tell you if there's a fee, they point out the shortcomings. The other thing that I do is I like to read user reviews, because user reviews in anything, Larry, not just computer stuff, but anything around the house, the car, music, you know, electronics, anything. Reading the user reviews, people share their good and bad experiences. And they also point out things that sometimes you don't even think about to look at and consider. And sometimes the item that you're considering doesn't have that feature, and you go, hey, I'd like to have that feature. So what does? So it may change your, you know, thought process and what you're picking out for a solution.
Here's a simple version of that. I use it for, I have some recipe sites that come up. And I'll always go to, if I see something I think I'm going to use, I always go to the comments, because you'll always find somebody said, well, I substituted this and I had much better luck, or if you do it exactly the way the recipe says, you're going to really need to add another half a cup of something or other.
Yep.
And that's exactly what you're saying.
Yep.
You're getting great information. I almost always, I pretty much always read those reviews, or at least several of them, before I would go ahead and use it. So there you go. We have callers online. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I was supposed to mention that starting today, you're going to be hearing new voices and new perspectives during our evening lineup on the Ideas Network, with shows like Latino USA, Tuesdays at 7 o'clock. And, of course, some of your old favorites are moving to new times, like The Moth, which is moving to Thursdays at 7. And you can see our entire schedule and learn about our new programs online. Go to WPR.org. That's WPR.org, and you can find out all about all the new programming and the new changes that we have for our program. So,
Larry?
Yeah.
So there's one other currency that I didn't mention mm-hmm. online that's also used, and it's called Bitcoin.
Oh, Bitcoin.
And
yeah.
I don't know if that's ever come up over the years, but
yeah.
It's been around for a while. It's a digital currency, and it's used. You know, the value fluctuates of a Bitcoin, which is kind of hard to deal with. But it is another form of, money that's used to be exchanged globally. People use it.
Kim in Madison has something for us. Kim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was calling because this is a great topic, but someone, I think it was an IT person a long time ago, suggested a way to make patterns for passwords that you can remember so that no matter what site you're at, you can always remember your password. So what I did is I started to create a pattern that I could use no matter where I was. For example, if I went to Amazon.com and the primary word is Amazon, I would use, say, the third letter as my first letter of my password, like an A,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe the last letter would be an N, and I would make that a capital, so I'd have a small A, a capital N, and then I always use the same number, so pick a number, whatever that would be, say it's a 7, and then I would take maybe the first number and repeat it 3 times, so it would be AAA. So basically, you create a chain
yep.
so that you can, if once you remember what that combination is, mm-hmm. you can always know what your password's going to be no matter what website you're at. And I've been using it for years, and I know what my pattern is,
mm-hmm.
and I have a different password for every website, and it works fabulously.
Wow, that's
great.
I like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I might be stealing your idea and using it myself, Kim.
Yeah, good. And, make your own pattern. That's not really my pattern, by the
sure.
way.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I understand, though.
Right, but you would make it up, and what I had to do is I had to write it down because I couldn't remember what I did, and I wrote it down, and then every time you use it, you remember it, and now I just know what my pattern is, so mm-hmm. really
yep,
easy.
That's a great idea.
Thanks,
yeah.
Kim.
Love it.
All right, appreciate the call.
What's nice is it makes it easy for figuring it out for whatever website you're on because you use the same pattern.
And the password app that we were talking about earlier, it's mm-hmm. it's one password. It's not iPassword. It is one password. Jill had it up for me as one password, and then I'm thinking, she really mean I or does she mean one?
Mm-hmm.
I should just trust her. She's just like that security lock. You should be able to trust her when you see that message, Larry. Well. And I hope you can trust that we'll continue this conversation. Peter Green with us right up until 12:30 today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at your personal computer with Peter Green, who has the website at Infostar.com. Always great to have him come by. You have a question or a concern about your computer, maybe it's acting kind of hinky, give us a call. That's the scientific term. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Appreciate your call. We have Sharon emailed to ask why solid-state drives. Oh, wait a minute. Before we go to that, I do want to go back to the caller, the elderly lady who may have had the credit card scam, or probably did have the credit card scam. A couple of listeners wanted to make sure the lady who paid for computer help should call her bank or credit card company for a credit on that. And I think that is a very good piece of advice. Get that phone number off the back of your card and make that call. Then Sharon emailed to ask why solid-state drive sizes are different from standard hard drives. She has a 1 gigabyte drive on her current laptop. Looking at new LPTs, several have SS drives, but size is 500. How does she know if all her files will transfer?
Well, the SSD drives are typically smaller. They haven't achieved the capacity that you see in the spinning drives. The reliability has gotten better. But in terms of capacity, if it's a Mac, you can go to the hard drive and click on Get Info. And on a Windows drive, you would click on Properties on the C drive, and it would tell you how much you're using, what kind of space you're using, how much free space you have, and then you can kind of gauge whether or not, you know, a 500 gigabyte SSD drive would be adequate for what you have.
Okay.
So you have to look at the storage capacity, how you're utilizing it on your present system, and the operating system takes up a certain amount of space, and then the applications take up a certain amount of space, and then your data files. And if you're into using email in a big way, email files grow unless you delete them and take care of them. And, you know, just looking at how much space you're using and seeing whether or not an SSD drive might be, you know, a good solution. The thing about SSD drives is they're faster. Mm-hmm. The access speed is faster, and that's why they're more attractive to people for using in terms of bringing up an application quicker, bringing up your system starting faster. SSD drives do have the speed advantage.
John on email wondering, he tried to send some emails this morning and sort of look like they were sent, but they didn't send, and they're somewhere. He has no where.
Are they?
He went to look on the sent,
right.
and they didn't make it out.
So they didn't
make it out.
They might still be in the outbox, and if they're still sitting there in the outbox, there may be a problem with the internet connection.
Oh.
There may be a problem with the mail server.
Okay.
So
Of different things to look for.
Well, you do is you retry it, and sometimes they come up with error messages. Sometimes they don't. They just don't go out. Well, they usually do have an error message. It says it didn't go out, and it gives you maybe a code, or it says the messages weren't sent. So she'd look in the outbox, and that might mean you need to make a call to your internet service provider.
There we go. Audrey in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Audrey. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is I have an ASUS computer, which I use as a file server at work, and lately it has, last year it was acting up, and I was told by ASUS to replace the hard drive because it was constantly going into an error message when I would start the computer, and it would tell me to go into BIOS settings, and my boot up menu was gone. So after I put the hard drive in last May, it was fine up until about 4 weeks ago. It started doing the same thing. This time, ASUS told me that I was supposed to change the battery on the motherboard, and if that didn't take care of it, I was supposed to change the power supply. And so this morning when I got to work, I've been leaving my computer on for the fear of turning it off that I wouldn't be able to restart it. And it was in a state of error again. And when I went into the BIOS settings, my whole boot up menu was gone. So I threw the new battery in this morning, which then it put me into another error message saying that I had to put in the startup disk in order to recover my computer. When I hit F2, it brought me back to the BIOS settings, and finally my boot up. My boot up menu, my three, like the UEFI, the SATA, and the PC Windows startup are all there, but they're constantly in the wrong order.
Mm-hmm.
So then I have to put them in the correct order and then save, but it never saves the order in which my boot up is, and it throws everything off.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
You haven't changed the power supply yet.
I have not changed the power supply yet because I talked to two different people at ASUS, and one person swears it's the battery, and the other person says, nope, it's the power supply. So they said before you buy the power supply, change the battery and see how that is.
I can tell you from experience, bad power supplies make hard drives act weird and bad.
Okay.
So I would change the power. The first thing I would do without not even blinking an eye is I would have changed power supply.
Okay.
Even before I changed the hard drive.
Oh, I just put a brand new.
No, I understand that. I understand that. But I'm saying the problems that you had before could have been symptomatic of a bad power supply.
Yeah.
Okay.
A bad power supply will make a hard drive act bad. I've been through that over 20 years ago.
There we go, Audrey. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
And it's not difficult to do, but you have to make sure that you get a power supply that matches up with what you have.
Right.
So you need to open it. If you're going to be the kind of person to do it yourself, or you open it up, unplug everything, work in your socks, so and make sure you touch and dissipate static, and take pictures. Use your smartphone and take pictures of how things are hooked up. Love taking pictures with the smartphone.
Yeah,
because it shows you what it looked like when it was hooked up correctly. A lot of things can only get hooked up one way. They need a little bit of tug or a little bit of prying to pull out. But pull them straight out. Don't pull them at an angle. Things are designed to hook
in. Straight in and straight out.
Yeah, because you don't want to fatigue and cause system board or motherboard problems. And you can go, you know, I have spare ones available for the very reason that she stated.
Yeah.
For working with our computers. eBay is a great place to save money on buying those. You might have problems finding them locally, you know, depending upon the age of the system. So, you know, that's just something that I personally plan ahead for because been there, done that a long, long time ago.
Thanks again, Audrey. Let's turn to Pat in Ithaca next. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Larry. Here's my problem. I had to update and get a new computer for my shop, and it's got Windows 10 on it, which is fine. But I have satellite internet here, and Windows 10, it's the home edition, doesn't have a setting so that I can have updates download between like 1 and 8 overnight.
Uh-huh.
So when it does its downloads, I've had to completely turn the updates off because when it does the updates, it uses so much of my download capacity that I'll go through my whole allowance in 2 weeks. So is there a way to get around that other than just turning it to set it as a metered connection? Or is Microsoft looking at adding that to Windows 10 so that you can download updates off hours?
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, that's a good question. From what I've understood about Windows 10 is they basically want to make sure that you're updated all the time. And with how large things have gotten, you have a very interesting problem with metered internet access and Microsoft trying to throw the book at you.
Yes, they are.
For what they feel is their right to do.
So my other only option then would be to pick a day of every couple of weeks and stay at my computer at 2 o'clock in the morning and enable the updates.
Check with your satellite provider and see if they've. I'm sure you're not the only one out there with that kind of issue. Windows 10 has been out long enough that they might have a solution for you.
Yeah,
I would check with them because, like I said, if that's the setup that you have with your satellite provider, and Windows 10 has been out for basically 2/3 of a year, I'm sure you're not the first person that's been having to deal with that.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
Yeah, give it a try. Shoot us a note back and let us know what happens, too. I'd like to know that myself, Pat. Thank you.
Yeah, I would put it back on the satellite company, you know, that's where you have metered access, and see what they have to say about that.
Speaking of Windows 10, Bob emailed in, he upgraded to Windows 10, wondering if he needs to have antivirus programs, or is it protected well enough by Microsoft?
Yes, Windows, the most secure operating system in the world, keeps getting more secure. I'm being sarcastic. Yes, you do need some kind of protection. There are free antivirus programs out there. Microsoft has got some security essentials. They've got stuff built into theirs, but you should look at maybe AVG, Avast. I would stay away. Although those have become fairly large players, I would stay away from Norton, McAfee. Those are, you know, they have targets that the hackers are trying to get into more often for those than the others.
And in a word or two, is antivirus software good against ransomware?
It is, as long as you keep it up to date.
Yeah.
And again, nothing is 100% because there's always somebody trying a new trick out there, but keeping it up to date is very important.
Very important. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. You'll be with us right up till 12:30. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post there. Back after the news. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideals Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Pete, we have, at this time of the show, you always have a top 10 list for us of sites that are kind of interesting and we may want to check out. And what have you got for us today?
So if you go to Infostar.com, on the top left, it's got the top 10 archives, or click on the current top 10 and they're all there. For the first one, recallguide.org. It's a resource to help you keep track of your medications and learn about important recalls, and prescription information might actually have affect you. Number two is Pet Education. And it's provided by Doctors Foster and Smith, which also sell pet supplies, but it's access to veterinary-authored and screened information on pet care.
Wisconsin site, too, for that matter.
Yeah, yep. Number three is Sublime Text, SublimeText.com, and it's available for cross-platform, so Apple, Windows, Linux. It's a sophisticated text editor for code markup, which is HTML web pages. So that's something worth looking at. Number four is Instructables.com, a place to explore, research, document, and share your creations. And I believe it started out from MIT as just kind of like an experiment, and it's well-organized, and there are over 100,000 projects on it now. Number five, you would think this would be for just like institutions, education, so forth. It's grants.gov. It's your place to search and find and apply for federal grants, but there are actually some limited ones available for individuals. So it's worth checking out. Number six is explainthatstuff.com. So if you want to know how something works, it's a free online science and technology book. Number seven is do-it-yourself. So for remodelers and home builders, a lot of good information shared there. A big name site, nationalgeographic.com. Always a fun place to visit. And it's a resource that's put out by the National Geographic Society. And they do a lot of great things for our globe.
Oh, yeah. So it's wonderful site.
It's something to check out if you haven't. And for our upcoming baseball season, there's MLBTradeRumors.com. And they keep up with relevant, legitimate baseball rumors for all 30 teams.
My 12-year-old daughter will be looking at that one.
And number 10, if you haven't checked out, UWBadgers.com, and all the recent changes with the women's basketball coach and the men's hockey teams. There's a lot of good
A lot of good stuff there. Those are 10 good ones.
That'll keep you busy for a while. And if you have problems falling asleep at night, take your tablet or your smartphone and
check them out,
and then you'll fall asleep.
There we go. Well, Lucas in Wisconsin Dells has a question for you, so let's go there. Lucas, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me. My question, Peter, was I've heard that the Tor web browser is pretty much the most safe and secure way to send emails and browse the web, as, if I understand it correctly, every website is secure. I was hoping you could give me some insight on that, and I will take that off there.
All right. Thanks for calling.
It's a good question. It's a pretty good solution. It's not perfect. There are some limitations, but there's usually not sniffers, you know, laying around all over the place for, you know, people that are browsing the web. They basically have you go, when you connect and look at the web, they have you connect through a number of their different servers. So you're kind of like handed off, and it's very hard to trace. There are some really good articles online about how it does what it does. And again, it's not 100%, but it's pretty darn good at what it does.
All right.
So it's, and if you really want to know the science behind how it you know, to explain how it does it, is to, you know, do a Google or Yahoo or Bing search on it, and, you know,
there you go.
You'll find some good articles on it.
But it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ron in La Crosse, hi, thanks for waiting.
Yeah, I read in a book once, Windows XP for Beginners. I have an old Hewlett-Packard laptop. When I first went online, I used dial-up access, mm-hmm. and later DSL, and then later cable. But I was wondering, I read in this book that if you really don't want to pick up viruses on a Windows operating system, a best precaution, just as good as a firewall, would be to use dial-up for online access, because your URL address for your computer changes every time you turn on the dial-up modem. And, of course, when you go offline, the modem shuts down, and you're less likely for a hacker to get your URL address if it's always changing.
Mm-hmm. The thing with the dial-up connection is they're not fast enough to keep up with the robust speeds that the web has come to push on us, so your user experience suffers.
Mm-hmm.
And
but he's right about the
Every time, basically, when you get on the internet, you're logging onto a port. So you know, when you're at home with the DSL hookup and with the cable, you're assigned a port, and then that router distributes it. Versus a modem, where you're making that one-time connection, calling into their port, and those are, it's just kind of random. At chance, you might get the same one that you called from the day before, or the time before that you were on, but typically not.
No.
I also like to say that if people have several passwords, I think a best way to store them is probably on a Rolodex. It doesn't have to be the classic wheel one. There's some lateral ones that are kind of like the drawer in a filing cabinet. Of course, only much smaller. So, you know.
Yeah. But why not?
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks,
thank you,
Ron. Appreciate the call. You know, those... Oh, all those passwords.
I remember when I used to use dial-up, and I used to trick the internet service provider into thinking that I was staying on all the time, so I used to use software that kept me connected. So I wouldn't lose my port, because someone else would take it, and then I wouldn't be able to, sometimes you had to struggle to get on, because they would oversell the ports.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like selling too many, you know, seats on an airplane.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure I had my seat.
Oh, boy. Larry at Stevens Point, it is your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi. We're out in the country, and so our only real option where we live is satellite. So we're somewhat limited, and we have his and her computers. So when his computer went to Windows 10, the second one to go that way, we bumped into the metered problem that you were talking about before, where we had to go metered to do it. Check working with our satellite provider, they don't have a solution. And it's, you know, one of the major ones. They just don't have a solution. And Windows or Microsoft could do us a big favor if they could somehow allow us to specify when these come down, because we do have unlimited satellite usage from, I think it's midnight to 5 in the morning. If we could specify that time period, I don't know who to talk to complain to Microsoft on it, and I don't know whether they hear anything when you do complain.
Well, I have called Microsoft, and I've gotten through to tech support and, you know, individuals to talk there. They, if you do go to Microsoft.com, they do have a support link. I would click on that, and there are phone numbers to call and make that suggestion. The more people that do that, the more people that give feedback, that's how things change.
That's how things get changed,
Because they had a lot of feedback when they came out with Windows 8 and how they took away the user interface. And they came out with 8.1 pretty darn
pretty
quick.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, because it got a lot of people upset about it.
Squeaky.
Okay, so that's the thing we should do, and all of us with the problem should make that call.
Absolutely. Yeah. Squeaky wheels get greased.
Should make the call.
Yeah, Microsoft thinks we live in a perfect world where internet is on all the time at 100 gazillion gigabytes per second. And it's not.
It's not. Thanks, Larry. Thanks a lot
thanks
for calling.
For call.
Make that
Good
call.
Luck. Yeah.
Joanne in Menominee Falls, your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Hello. I have a Lenovo laptop I purchased last year, and right after I purchased the Windows 8, they said that they were going to upgrade to the Windows 10. Needless to say, I'm a little apprehensive of how to update this to the Windows 10 because I have the Neat program on my computer, which I use extensively for receipts and, and accounting and things. So do I need to back that up before I upgrade? Is it best to go to Microsoft itself, or can I use the little pop-ups they're doing?
Well, what I would do is check with the Neat manufacturer and make sure that they, you know, see if they have an update, you know, to make it compatible with Windows 10, or, you know, find out from them if there are any issues with that. Windows 10, in my opinion, works better than Windows 8. So I think, you know, if your system was purchased at a time where that 10 was available for you, I would take advantage of it. I would just make sure, you know, you have your data backed up and check and make sure you know, you said you use that Neat program a lot. I would just check with them. You could probably go to their website and they'd probably have that information, you know, readily available for you to, you know, confirm.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Can't say enough about backups when you're moving forward.
Yeah.
Like I was telling you, Larry, you know, I used to have an iPhone, have an Android phone. Saturday morning, I woke up. All my pictures just decided
on
to
your Android.
On my Android. Didn't shut it off, just there, wait, you know, use an alarm clock to wake me up. And then went out for an appointment and went to go show somebody a picture. And I was like, where'd all my pictures go?
They're gone. Know,
they're gone. So
I have my iPhone and I have all my pictures yet.
But backups.
Oh, yes.
You know, backups for your phone, backups for, you know, tablet, you know, whatever you think's important.
Download those photos.
Don't have a Google account, Google gives you a drive, you know, to put things up there, share or store. There are some people talk about privacy and things like that, but, you know, if it's pictures, you know, as long as it's, you know, normal pictures, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, I posted
I was taking
a couple
pictures of a house, vehicles, papers, you know, just.
Yeah.
But it's there for free to use.
We have Josh next from Sparta. Josh, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I've actually run into ransomware a couple times while on customers' computers trying to verify that ports are open. And I've used various websites for checking ports, but is there actually a safe one to use?
For checking ports?
Yeah. So I do some port forwarding for remote viewing of cameras.
Yeah, I've used them periodically, usually from the router manufacturers have some of those available, like D-Link, Cisco. You could probably check, like, the resources I mentioned before. I can't give you a specific one, but if you probably went to CNET or PCMag or ZDNet.com and looked for port checkers, you could probably find a number of them out there.
Yeah, if you just Google a port checker, you know, you find like a canyouseeme.org or something like that. But mm-hmm. I've used a couple of various ones, and twice I've been nabbed by ransomware.
Oh. Hmm. Interesting.
So I like the fact that I stumped you guys, I guess.
Yeah.
So you're saying you've gone out and grabbed a program to check a port for checking ports?
Yeah, if I'm on a PC, you know, I could just Google canyouseeme.org.
Right.
And it opens up a program. I can type in what port I want to check.
Right.
And it's going to tell me if that port's open or closed.
Okay. And then you're saying that ransomware is...
During that process, then I've had a computer lock up and demand a phone call and a credit card number.
Interesting. So you found, like, a way to trigger it.
Right.
Oh. What did you do in those situations?
We shut the computer down. And called someone a little smarter than myself.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you actually found the trigger to bring it out of hiding.
Right.
Wow.
And I actually, while discussing this with a customer and having them check their ports, they triggered it once.
Yeah. So any idea how it got through?
No idea. It's basically, you know, you're going on a browser, whether it be, a Firefox or Explorer, and Googling a port checker, mm-hmm. and I can think of three or four that I've used, but I know that canyouseeme.org, I know for sure that triggered it once.
So what are you looking for as a solution? Because it sounds to me like what you're sharing is an important thing, because you found the trigger that brings it out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you want to know how to get around that.
I'd really like to avoid that.
Yeah. Boy.
That's interesting, because some of the programs out there that steal the computer, you know, and say, hey, yeah. you know, ransomware, and say, hey, there is a, on my website under my tips, I believe it's either the last one or the second to last one. I think the company is called Neeber. I use that to sniff out stuff that's hiding on a system. And then I used Malwarebytes used to have a utility that would allow me to specify that stealth program that was hidden on the system and remove it from the computer. So I don't know if the latest version of Malwarebytes still has it in there, but they had the ability to delete a file that was hidden in their free version of the software. But this Neeber program would allow me to see what was operating in memory that was in the stealth mode, so I could identify it and then get rid of it. So I wonder if their software might work for what you want to do. But it's very interesting that you brought up that you found a trigger.
Yeah.
To bring it out of hiding.
Yeah, I almost guarantee I could do it again. It doesn't seem to matter where I'm at or what kind of browser I'm on, but any kind of port checking tool, and it'll just grab a hold of the computer.
Yeah, if you email Talk Radio, they'll forward your email to me, and then I can respond to you to make sure that you got the tool that I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm. I'll do that. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Very interesting. Some listeners suggested LastPass and Dashlane as good password apps. Mm-hmm. So that's something I wanted to pass along. A caller asked if it's possible to find the web address of ransomware and then block it.
They actually use the Bitcoin for, you know, currency, handoff and stuff like that for paying for that stuff. Unfortunately, that stuff moves,
yeah,
and it's
That's the problem.
It's out there in the cloud, and it's not so much... the definition of ransomware is that it's for you to pay to unlock something.
Yeah.
For you to pay to free you of what has now happened to you. So that could be paying to give you access to unencrypting files, or it could pay to free you of them being annoying on your, doing stuff to your computer. So, unfortunately, if it were me and we had a way to, globally work together and say, hey, this is not cool, this needs to come to an end, believe me, they would find a way, but...
Yeah, they would. Judy on Facebook posted that she has an old PC running Windows XP. Should she recycle it, or can she download Windows 10 on it so the operating system is supported?
No.
Not likely.
number one, you'd probably have a very difficult time. There might be not enough room on that. But this brings up something that we talked off the air about, is that for Windows 10, I would recommend that you probably be in the range of maybe 3 years old in terms of hardware. If you're in the 4 or 5, I'd really be very cautious that you might be able to get away with it, but you might have, again, a user experience problem where you might get frustrated with it, or you might have some issues with drivers not being supported with some things that are on your computer, video, sound card. You just might have some issues that you might get really frustrated with and hate your computer. So I would pick like 3 years as the cutoff for the hardware.
Chris on Facebook wonders if he should upgrade his 2007 MacBook to El Capitan.
2007 probably would not be able to.
No, I doubt it.
I think Apple actually is kind of kind and says, hey, we know your five-year-old hardware is not going to support what we have. I would be surprised if he would be able to. In fact, I'm positive that from 2007 he would not be able to go there.
So we've got, we got through a lot of stuff today.
Yeah.
Keep updating your antivirus software. I know you say that. Man, there's new stuff coming out all the time.
Yeah, and with the El Capitan upgrade, again, do some homework, do some due diligence, and check and make sure it's not only hardware support, but make sure that what you're using on your system is supported by that doing that upgrade, because some people get surprised by how things don't work. And we've had callers in previous shows with problems as related to that.
Pete, it's always a pleasure. Look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, that's his site. Go to that if you want those top 10 lists. He's got all of them posted. The latest is right up there. So if you didn't get them all, now would be a good time to go to that site and pick up what you wanted to pick up. Tomorrow we'll look at new eye screening technologies and how it might be able to prevent vision loss in the U.S. and around the world, actually. That's at 11. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.